Hello and welcome to the PB&J show. I am the PB, Patrick Butler, and joining me is the J, Jesse Hupmaker, all the way from wet and soggy New Orleans, I believe.
Well, yeah, it was wet and soggy a few days ago, and now it's been off and on wet. You know, to quote a favorite band of ours, REO Speedwagon, just riding the storm out, brother. Just riding the storm out.
Nice. The anticipation is building for what Barry, Hurricane Barry, or Tropical Storm Barry, I should say.
Yeah. Well, we got caught off guard because Wednesday we only had a 20% chance of rain. And by 8:30 in the morning, we had a flood. The city was flooded. Parts of the city that didn't flood during Katrina were flooded. We had a great amount of water at our house. And so I think that kind of put everybody on edge and pushed everything into overdrive. You know, at my work, Thursday we went in and pretty much moved everything either five feet off the floor or upstairs into the warehouse in preparations for this. There was a lot of things going on. There was part of me that was scared because the water kept rising in the river and was getting dangerously close to peak to 20 feet in some areas, 17 feet in some areas, which was at that point it would spill. So it kind of got you in this full on panic mode for everything. So it really seems like for a whole week we've been waiting for something to happen. You know, the original forecast after Wednesday was for it to happen Friday morning, and then Thursday it was going to happen Friday night. And then Friday, it was supposed to happen last night, overnight. I believe it's come on shore now, way far to the west. So sparing our city, but it's also going to really hurt some other rural areas of the state. So, you know, it's weird. It's like I've watched more news in the last 3 days than I think I have in 3 months. And it's constantly changing. Like, you get in your mind that, okay, it's going to rain at 6 o'clock tonight, so we got to get the dogs taken care of before 6 o'clock. And then 5 o'clock rolls around. Nope, it's not coming until 9 o'clock, you know? So it's this constant wait and see that it's really frustrating, creating a little sense of cabin fever as well.
All right. We cover weather on the show as well, folks. and to just finish out the weather report in the Midwest, it is nothing but hot and humid and more to come this week. But that being said, we're going to jump into things. I'll tell you what, after our last show, we had a lot of good feedback from several different listeners, and a lot of good conversations occurred in response to the topic, which was Jesse and I really went into reinventing yourself, reinventing your career in specific, and how that happens and to a certain extent. And that touched a nerve because it seems as if people responded because they've had to go through that. And so we wanted to pick that conversation up again and take it a little bit further. And in this case, we wanted to talk about why people have to maybe change the field they're in, maybe halfway through their career or more, and at what age that occurs, why that's happening, how that's going, and really how that's affecting things in the workplace, because it seems to be more and more prevalent as we get into the world that we're in. You know, the gig economy, it's often referred to, with people job hopping and picking up extra gigs for cash, but many people in particular are changing careers or have to. And that's where we're going to go today. Sound good?
It does. You know, just a quick thing. I've been thinking about this, and you know, reinventing ourselves for career, whatever. But then I also thought, I don't think there's ever been a point in our lives where it is not uncommon for people to have multiple jobs. You know, and a lot of it is reinventing. You know, your day job may be just throwing this out there. I don't want to get any heat from financial advisors, you know, and their evening job is a waiter or bartender. And the common thread that I've come across with people that are working multiple jobs in fields that aren't even related, you know, in theory, is student loans, you know, the debt. And to me, I can see it, and it does make sense. I'm not sure where the career reinvention, or is it just a, you know, doing the quick cash to make ends meet, get some cash rolling, be able to be a little more fluid. I don't know. That's a whole different story, I guess. But that was just something that's popped into my head when we started talking about having a part two of this. So.
Sure. No, I mean, I think that you're right. People have had to work multiple jobs. I will say, I think we've transitioned in one area, though, where now it is not as common to have your main career or job and stay with the same company for an extended period of time. I think that's definitely shifted in a big way. Now, some people may stay in the same field and work for a different company, but the longevity with a particular company, that's definitely changed. To your point on the working the second job, I know I've run into a ton of teachers who are Uber drivers. And that has been very, very common to see. To your point, waitressing or waitering and bartending is a common second job as well. But I've also seen people having to change fields or make a career change. And a lot of it has been to acquisitions and realignment, as it's so often called. In the business world, where a company buys another company and suddenly they have to do some integration of the two companies, and suddenly there's singular departments instead of two departments, and that means people have to be let go.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. I mean, it also brings home a point where with these acquisitions, that it shows how smaller and smaller these companies that are all powerful are becoming, that they can go from having an industry that has, you know, four major companies pushing things down to two, and essentially cutting the workforce in half, and in their minds, not missing a beat. Is it, you know, is it really improving the overall experience for the customer, the consumer, or is it we are becoming more acclimated or accepting of things, and so that's just the new norm? You know, yeah, I get trimming the fat. Is there really a need for a huge HR department running two companies, or running one company now when you can consolidate it into one, and say if you had a staff of 20 people, bring it down to a staff of 10 or 12. I get that to a certain extent, but also it does. And I mean, I know personally from people that have went through those shakedowns, a lot of those people are in a state of they're not sure what to do. You know, they've either been in that career for 10 to 15, 20 years, and that's all they know, and trying to figure out how they're going to reinvent themselves in the world. And I guess that's really what it all comes down to, is somebody's ability and creativity and figuring out what they need and doing a lot of soul searching.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of acquisitions. I mean, I even went through one myself, as well as my wife. And in doing so, some of the things I've seen with the acquisitions, though, are as they downsize departments, integrating two different companies, a lot of people with experience are either given buyouts or let go. And in doing so, that means that someone with a lot of experience who's making probably a decent wage or salary is let go. But then that person is either replaced with someone that's entering the workforce a lot younger. They aren't, maybe they don't have that salary or wage built up yet. So for the company, it's cost savings. They can actually downsize the workforce and pay less for that workforce in the process. And it's unfortunate because now you've got someone that's out looking for a job and they've got a lot of experience, spent a lot of time, and now it's difficult for them to start over. It led me to a conversation I had this week with a gentleman, and he had actually went to culinary school. He had then worked in retail food services for, I think, about 13 or 14 years. They made some changes with his company, and suddenly he was trying to find another job. He ended up applying at two pretty big grocery retailers, Whole Foods and Trader Joe's, went through several sets of interviews, but ultimately didn't get the position. And here's what really struck me. This guy is great, by the way. He is fantastic. Just dynamic to be around. Heck of a nice guy. A lot of great experience. And I said, well, what gives, man? And he said, I'm going to be honest with you. I actually think it came down to my age. I can never prove that. And this guy, by the way, he's in his early 50s. He's not that old. However, he has gray facial hair. He has a shaved head, bald, and he felt that his image and his age cost him a position, even though he had great experience. And I actually tend to agree, because I think ageism happens quite a bit, which is frightening for people who now have to change their field or find a new position for one reason or another, and suddenly they're fighting a younger workforce, striving that workforce doesn't have to demand a higher wage necessarily, and suddenly these people are facing situations that are really challenging. This guy in particular, he got out of food services. He is now 2 years into a barbering career, doing very well, and he's doing great. And I asked him, I said, how does that affect you? I mean, does that, bother you? And he's like, actually, he goes, it was tough to kind of get used to, but I saw it as an opportunity. And he goes, now 2 years into it, I'm doing much better. And he goes, I'm actually really enjoying myself. And it's really kind of reignited myself. So basically, he went back to school, jumped into a new field. But I can't help but think that how many people are in that type of similar position.
Oh, definitely. I know when I worked for a telecommunications company, and we were hiring, we were opening stores, hiring, and I had to go through the big corporate thing, and they gave me all these bullet points of things not to look for, things you don't want to hire. And one of them was the person that may be coming from another company that had been at that company for a long time. They wanted people maybe that had just gotten their feet wet, in the field, or people that came from something completely different. A lot of the mindset is that we want to train them to be our employee. We don't want them bringing in something from another company. We don't want that constant, well, this is how we did it there, and hey, our company was more successful than yours, They want to bring in and mold you. I also think that's one of the biggest problems with when you do get older and you're going back into the workforce. I can't tell you how many interviews I sat in where I was a good 10 years older than the person that would be my boss. And a lot of times it was really difficult for me to sit there and say, well, this is what experience has taught me, because, do they really want to hear that? So you got to kind of tweak things towards, hey, I'm willing to learn, changing fields for me. I mean, I've done it in the retail industry. I went from different fields, and it is, there are ones that you love. I will admit that I loved the outdoor industry, truly did. I love the music retail industry. Not a big fan of when I went and worked in the pet food, pet supply industry. Love pets, just didn't like that industry. It's completely different, different group of people that you're working with. And the mindset of a lot of the customers that you come in contact with is completely different. I enjoy working in in the bike element of retail, different customer entirely, and different mindset as well, but kind of more in line with what I was used to in the outdoor industry. But yeah, you know, you have to rethink everything as you're going through it. I haven't had to make a real huge career switch, thank goodness, but I can see where there are so many obstacles placed in front of you that, you know, you think would be advantages.
No, absolutely. I do think that because of that, now people have had to get creative on so many fronts, and piece together different job opportunities, you know, pulling two jobs, pulling side gigs, so to speak, because they're literally trying to get creative and stay afloat and try to piece things together. And suddenly it's a different world when they're trying to apply, get interviews, get in with the companies. And I had someone say to me the other day, they're like, I'm just tired of this, trying to find a job. They're, you know, they're shipping out resumes, they're using all the sites, they're trying to make any sort of connection. And, you know, the comment was, it feels like it's just all in who you know. And I definitely have seen that to be true in many respects, about having that in with someone based on that a relationship or a referral. And I don't know, I just can't help but think that we're going to continue to see a shifting job market, which will be interesting for people in their 40s or 50s as they try to make a transition or stay afloat.
Yeah, you know, and I've been, since we floated this topic out, I believe you did, floated it out about 3 weeks ago, you know, I've been just really trying to think what direction I would want to go in if I had to in that situation. And, you know, I'm not really sure. There is that part of me that wants to go back to school, but also at the same time, it's, you know, you'll be a 50-year-old with another degree entering a workforce, and you're going to be, you know, working with people half your age. And a lot of companies shy away from that, you know, and I constantly think about what direction I want to go in, where would I want to go, what would I want to do. And you know, I think it really, like you're saying, it's in so much of it's in who you know. I can tell you from hiring for years, the first thing whenever there was an opening, or I knew there was going to be an opening, is you start prodding your good employees. Hey, do you know anyone that's looking for a job? Or hey, so and so works at blah blah blah. Do you think that we could get he or she to come work for us? What are they looking for? What do they need? What are they missing? You know, and so it is really, truly one of those things that, as an older person, it becomes harder because your contacts are oftentimes the ones that are being, you know, out of a job, or have they just went into a consulting and doing something on their own where they're completely independent. And so there's no real way for you to say, hey, do you need an assistant to your consultant? You know?
Exactly. I don't know. I've thought about it a lot. I mean, I love the field that I'm in, but you know, you always are considering your options and trying to make sure that you're secure and feeling good, and wondering, what if I had to make a change? I mean, I took several semesters of school a couple years ago, and I'll be honest, I used some student loans, took out some student loans, excuse me, to cover it at the time. And I look back on that now, I'm like, Jesus, that's like 12 grand just for the couple semesters that I, you know, had taken. And it was great education, and I appreciated it. But then I'm questioning, you know, would I want to pay that out of pocket moving forward to avoid that? Could I do that? And to your point, more importantly, would it be worth it at this stage to do so?
Yeah, totally. I mean, that's where I kind of am. I want to go back just because, you know, I like broadening my mind in that regard. And I also find that in school, you meet so many different people. You know, I tend to think that I live in my bubble where the people that I hang out with the most or talk with the most are the people that I have the most in common with. And then, you know, you go and you sit in the classroom with 25 people and you're lucky if one of them likes the same music as you, you know? And then you're having to readjust that. I also kind of enjoy that to a certain extent. But being the old man, when you have a classroom of 18, 19-year-olds who are, you know, playing on their phone or half asleep or, you know, show up late to class, leave class early, while you're sitting there, like, you know, trying to take everything in, it does get a little frustrating. At the end of the day, also, it's like you said, would I be better off taking this $12,000 and going to the casino or the stock market, whatever, or, you know, is this going to pay off for me long term?
Well, it's interesting you bring that up because that is actually my new philosophy. I've adjusted my thinking, and now I put everything into gambling.
You know, lottery, the drinks are gambling, always free.
It works.
Yeah,
that's right.
Has to hit sometime, right?
Right. I mean, why not? All right, man, let's shift gears a little bit. Let's jump into that good old punch list. What are we watching, listening to, reading, and of course, importantly, drinking. So where are you at?
Let's start on TV. There's been a show, a series on Netflix that I've been avoiding for a really long time, Flint Town, and Beth decided to put it on this morning, and we're a couple episodes in, and it's really fascinating. You know, knowing the back history of Flint, Michigan, and its current situation, hell, kind of ties into what we're talking about. We had a auto industry totally removed from a city, and you have a city that was at one time, I think, what, 300,000 or 400,000 people. And now it's down to 100,000, trying to either reinvent themselves or get the hell out of Flint. But it's interesting watching. Sad, very sad. But I've been watching Flint Town. How about you there, Pat?
I have been continuing to go through the current season of The Handmaid's Tale. And Hulu's interesting. Because in this particular case, I don't know if they do it for every single series, but for this, since it's something they control, they drop an episode per week instead of dumping the entire season on you. So I literally have to wait each week, and I'm up to speed on it. And it continues to just keep me sucked in, man. I mean, The Handmaid's Tale is, that can be some dark stuff, man, but it's so good. I love Elizabeth Moss and what she's doing, but jeez. It'll get you.
Yeah, I got to go back and watch that. I had to take a break because it was almost like watching the news here, so I had to stop watching that. What have you been listening to?
Lately, I have been listening to, believe it or not, a lot of house music. I wanted something. I was doing some cleaning, organizing some stuff. In the office and cleaning around the house and just for travel. I wanted something to keep me going. And so I dug through and I created a pretty big playlist of house music. Now, I can't do it all the time, but man, when I need that pep in my step and I need to cut a rug, and that's where I'm headed. So I've been listening to a ton of house music. How about you?
Nice. Well, due to the weather and everything, I wasn't able to get out to the record store and get anything. So I did pick up the Prince Originals a few weeks back. And I keep coming back to a few songs on there and listening. I mean, the whole album, it's really cool listening to his interpretation and then listening to the interpretation of the artist that he gave the song to. But man, his version of Manic Monday, oh my God, just crushes. And at that time, I believe that came out around, he wrote it around Raspberry Beret, Pop Life, that era. And if he would have put that on, oh my God, that album would have just been amazing. I mean, even better, but it would have just been just nonstop. But so Prince Originals is what I've been listening to. When you said house music, I had a flashback to the TV show Jackass and the guy Party Boy, and I was just picture hoping that you weren't doing Party Boy around the house.
I tried to avoid that. I love it.
All right, what have you been reading?
Let's see. My sister sent me a couple of books, and I was diving into one this last week, and it's called The Bridesmaid's Daughter, and it's a true story, and it is based on this woman who's really kind of digging deep into her past, and she's tried to avoid it, but she also sheds light on why. And her mother, long story short, her mother was actually very good friends with Grace Kelly, the infamous Grace Kelly, and her big, huge wedding in Monaco, and you know, that was a huge headline grabber at the time. And so her mother was tied in and doing modeling in New York back in the day. And that's how she met Grace Kelly. And then even throughout the marriage, as she was the Princess of Monaco, she remained friends with her. But her mother started to deal with mental health issues. And this woman basically tells a story of she was kind of ashamed of it in a sense and kind of hid it. Because her mother was still living in New York, and they tried all these different efforts to help her. And she was ended up in shelters because she would forgo some of the treatments or medication. And so it turned into an issue because this woman still had her mother would still get recognized by the relationship she had with Grace Kelly. And so suddenly it was kind of a weird situation for her daughter living, you know, just outside of New York. And tabloids would pick it up periodically, and it would be an issue for her as she tried to downplay this in her life, but she's explaining why. And so it's a very interesting story, which kind of wild, just weird to hear a story that's tied into someone famous like that. So I'm reading The Bridesmaid's Daughter, almost done with it. How about you?
Well, I had a customer come in about 2 months ago, and he's like, "Hey, do you like reading?" I'm like, "Oh, good Lord." You know, thinking for my first thought was this is going to be a religious, are we going to get some religious pamphlet or something out of it? And I was like, oh yeah, I do like reading things that I enjoy, you know, things that I like, a lot of books on music and sports and stuff like that. He goes, "Oh, all right. Well, great." And I was like, "Oh, okay." And he introduced himself, and I told him, you know, I introduced myself. He's like, "All right, okay, that's good to know." And I was like, "All right, anything you need, you come in for?" "Yeah, I just need to get an inner tube." I'm like, "All right, no big deal." Literally the next day, he comes back in. He goes, "Oh, I brought in a book for you." And I was like, "Okay, sure." He goes, "You know, it's called Miles from Nowhere. It's this woman's... it's around the world. It's her bicycle adventures around the world." I was like, "Oh, cool. I'll check it out." And then I mentioned this one cyclist, these two books that he wrote. Asked him if, you know, he had read them. He goes, "Oh, I heard about them." I was like, "Just check them out. Good deal." I'm like, "No big deal." And he comes in the next day and he goes, "Oh, by the way, she didn't die during the book, but she died shortly after on an adventure." And I was just like, "Oh my God, okay, you know, do I tell him like some major things from the books I told him about?" Or and I was real hesitant to read it, knowing that she died not during the book, but, you know, it's like I don't expect everything to end up like, you know, all rainbows and unicorns, but it's like, just let me read the book and then, like, let me do my own figuring out about it. But anyway, Miles from Nowhere. It's interesting. I mean, I always like reading about these people that are kind of, they're going on and watching shows about it, documentaries, where they're in places that we don't all ever always go to or see or know anything about. So, but it's interesting. And most importantly, what have you been drinking in this heat?
All right. After that spoiler alert. Try to keep cool. I was in Long Beach, California this week for work, and we happened to have a really great lunch and get together, hang out at Ballast Point Brewery in Long Beach. And what a fantastic venue they've got right on the water. Just a massive setup that is really nice. But boy, I enjoyed their Sculpin IPA. That is such a goodie. And so that was a nice little diversion in our work day, and I couldn't recommend that more. I know they've got a couple locations, but the one in Long Beach was fantastic, and boy, that Sculpin IPA is a goodie.
Yeah, that's a good.
How about you?
That's a good good beer. Hold on, I'm just trying to think of some. Yeah, that's. Did you see Snoop Dogg? I was trying to remember. I thought he was from LBC. Did you see him while you're out there?
I did plenty of driving around looking for some lowriders. Nothing, nothing, no sign of him.
Last Monday, I think we were on our like third or fourth straight day of record heat, near record heat. And I went to this bar around here, met one of my friends, and it was so stinking hot. And they had this Parish Brewery, which is a local brewery. They had this Sips series, blackberry, mango, and lemonade alcohol. It's classified as a sour, but it wasn't sour at all. It was dangerous. but man, I tell you, for like the heat, it was so, it drank like lemonade. It really did. And before I know it, it's like my coworker, he just kept. Every time his beer was done, he'd go get another one. I was like, man, oh, this is so good. I wasn't paying attention to it. And then the other day, he's like, do you know we had 6 beers each the other night? I was like, holy shit. No. I was like, you know, I did notice when I was biking home that, and you know, I kind of felt a little tipsy. But man, I was like, no, I didn't. And he goes, yeah. I was like, oh, shit. He said, how was the beer? He goes, great. He goes, yeah, we had 6 of the same thing. I'm like, well, yeah, it was good. But anyway, Parish Sips, the blackberry, mango, and lemonade. It was really, really good.
Can't go wrong. Good summertime drinking. All right. Well, we've come to the end of yet another episode. Enjoyed kind of doing a two-parter on this subject, and glad it touched a nerve with some people. So good talking, my friend.
Yeah, I appreciate everybody's feedback too. I did get quite a few messages about this the last one, so I appreciate that. Thank you.
All right, well, that brings us to the end of another PB&J show, and I want to tell everybody thanks for listening, and also the PB&J show is a Find the River production. Thanks, everybody. We'll be talking to you very soon.
Bye now.